The earliest.
And good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining the Interoperability Standards Workgroup. My name is Mike Berry. I'm with ONC, and we are always pleased that you could join us. As a reminder, your feedback is welcomed, which could be typed in the chat feature throughout the meeting or could be made verbally during the public comment period. That's scheduled for about 11:55 Eastern time this morning. I'd like to begin roll call of our work group members. So when I call your name, please indicate that you are present. And I'll start with our co-chairs, Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Arianne Malik.
Good morning.
Kelly Aldrich.
Hi, good morning.
Hans Budendeck. Thomas Cantalina. Christina Caraballo. Grace Cordovano. Steve Eichner.
Good morning.
Adigun Lapali. Raj Godavarti. Tim Gerges. Ken Kalmoto. Leslie Leonard. Hung Lu. David McCauley.
Good morning.
Clem McDonald. Aaron Meary. Mark Savage.
Good morning. From the West Coast, from St. James.
Michelle Schreiber.
Morning, from the Midwest contingent.
Abby Sears.
Good morning.
And Ram Sharam.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you. And now please join me in welcoming Stephen and Arianne for their opening remarks.
Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome back. We see that Christina's joined since we passed over her name in the roll call. We are excited to have a session today where we can really dig into the comments that everyone has been providing. So we are going to do just that under our charge 1A. And I think we're kind of simultaneously looking at 1A and 1B with the comments, looking at things that can be done to improve on the items that were included in draft V3, as well as things that people would like to promote into V3 over and above what was included in the draft, drawing on what's in level 2. Naturally, we have commentary about things that are not yet at level 2 that people are enthusiastic about, which is always an interesting discussion, but not directly related to our tasks. And then we will have public comment and adjourns. Any questions about the agenda? Or anything new that anybody feels that they need to bring to us today?
Even we might want to just give a briefing on when we're going to have the hearing for disability status and accommodations.
Yes, which is next week. And we've had, I have to admit, you know, I've been a little bit in rehab land this past week, not an excuse, but just a reality. And I know we've had some ideas and names submitted. I know there's some people out there who are thinking about joining us. I don't think we have an exact roster of who's going to be joining us next week. Maybe Al and Mike and you, Arianne, what is everybody's impression of that? I was thinking we would get towards that to that at the end, but we might as well jump in with that.
I don't think we've got everybody locked down.
Why don't we just spend our time after this meeting just locking in the roster, but did want to make everybody aware that we were going to spend today going deep into spreadsheet land, and then next week going through disability and accommodation.
And I think the other thing we'd like to do today as part of our work is kind of go back and close the loop on some of the questions we've already opened up. You know, Abby raised some key questions around the address standard and how we can potentially recommend moving forward with Project USA while simultaneously recommending to ONC that they do the parallel work to focus on address standards as they relate to people who are experiencing homelessness, which I think we all felt was pretty important. We still want to finalize our thinking about recommendations regarding the gender harmony content. So we don't want to drop the ball on any of those. So I don't know, Arian, did you want to, before we jump into the spreadsheet or perhaps simultaneously, did you want to bring us back to either of those items?
I think the spreadsheet is probably the best place for USA. There are at least two comments in the spreadsheet relative to USA. I was thinking this morning about how we never memorialized our recommendations for gender harmony and in particular gender identity. So why don't I take the action of committing to memorializing some of the email summary that we've had for the gender harmony work and putting that into the spreadsheet as well.
Right.
But I think the sense of the task force is let's adopt the gender harmony vocabulary for gender identity as a minimum. So basically adopt the gender harmony recommendations relative to vocabulary for gender identity. And then I think the only point of controversy might be what to do with sex assigned at birth from a USCDI V3 perspective or V2 perspective. We can either follow the recommendations of gender harmony and not include it, or we can sort of let it pass through as a but put in some of the gender harmony commentary. But again, I think it's probably better for me to sharpen up the discussion by having something more specific in the spreadsheet to react to.
I think that.
Arian, can I have a quick thought there?
Sure.
I noticed this morning that Abby and I had put our names by a recommendation, but we hadn't actually fleshed anything out. So I took a stab at that this morning. I don't think Abby has seen it yet. So
oh, okay. Good.
I want to leave room for her to edit, but there may be something to start working with if that's the pleasure of the group.
Fantastic. Okay, good.
Arian?
David?
Just on that topic, I get confused exactly about what we are to do with commenting on things that are already in earlier versions of the USCDI.
Yeah, that was the I don't know what to do about sex assigned at birth comment. And as I said, I think it's probably better just to put a sharper proposal and just have a discussion as a work group.
And it was your point that sexual orientation would become gender identity?
I think my understanding is gender identity is already a field in USCDI V3, and that the sense of the work group was to adopt the gender harmony vocabulary set for gender identity.
Right, and then what happens to sexual orientation, which is, I think, already in there, or I can't tell. Now it's not listed as a new element.
It's in V2, and it's separate from the gender harmony project's recommendation.
Fine. Okay.
Yeah.
Is there a conflict to have? I'm maybe not completely up to speed on the subtleties of how that we should think about these things, but do they both need to be there? The V3 and the V2?
David, this is Al from ONC. Mm-hmm. They both are part of USCDI and they're both part of certification, gender identity and sexual orientation. And the comments that we're seeking are specifically on gender identity and not specifically on sexual orientation.
Okay.
And those are not redundant, David. One has to do with how one thinks about one's own gender and the other has to do with how one is oriented to others sexually.
But we're going to, okay. I don't understand, but I have nothing constructive to add. So I'll leave it be.
All right. Shall we proceed? Am I muted?
Onward.
Good.
So where to start, Stephen?
So let's see. We have sitting at the top of the spreadsheet, interestingly, now in row two, where you're pointing us, and the recommendation that now has both Abby and Mark's name on it about patient demographics and the data element address. So this was the Project USA issue.
Stephen, maybe I can recommend that we go to my comment first as a meta comment relative to USA, and then we dive into this particular one. Happy to go either direction, but I feel like we're zooming in, going down deep as opposed to looking at the broader recommendation first.
So your comment on row three.
My comment on patient demographics, I don't know what row it is. It's in these days. But I did put in commentary on, I don't know how the spreadsheet's yet, filtered at this point. There we go. Good.
There's two address comments.
Yeah. So I committed to this one last time, for how to propose generally handling Project USA, the Project USA specification in the commentary that we had after the hearing. We noted that we have a bunch of data that's been collected prior to the USA specification. Because of the way the specification's written, it's an address normalization specification. So it's possible to collect address information in line with Project USA. It's also possible to collect address information as you know, funky old fields. And the proposal that I had that I committed to more sharply defining in a recommendation was to handle. There are two ways that we could go about this. One would be to strictly require going forward that address information be normalized to the USA standard and the associated AHIMA implementation guide. If we did that, we'd have to also recommend that all previous address information get renormalized and that, you know, all healthcare stakeholders commit to normalization of data to USA. I think in particular the latter would create a ton of value. There's some other conversations I think we might have that are a little bit out of our remit relative to standing up a USA validator as a nation. That feels like it would have to be a prerequisite. My belief is that the right way to handle data variability is to include the USA specification and AHIMA implementation guide as the content model for address, but also include a metadata tag in the same way that we do for vocabulary content that indicates what the content model was used for address information. And one might imagine, at least out of the gate, two content models. One would be an unnormalized content model, and the other would be, you know, an assertion that this content is normalized to the USA specification. So I will pause there.
So, Arian, restate your recommendation so we can get it down.
Sure. The recommendation is to, as noted here, adopt Project USA and the associated AHIMA implementation guide as the content model for address, with an additional metadata element indicating the content model used initially pre-USA, so basically non-normalized content model and the USA AHIMA IG guide. In the future, we might contemplate that there would be multiple guides or multiple content models, but at the outset, there would just be two. And receivers of data or reviewers of data in an EHR would know based on the associated metadata tag whether they could expect the data that they're receiving to be normalized and processed accordingly to the USA guide or non-normalized, at which point they might make decisions relative to normalization.
All right. So is it anybody unclear on Arian's recommendation? Then Arian, I would suggest that we, Clem, we've got some questions coming up in the chat. Go ahead, Clem.
Just wonder how high a lift this is for users and senders, or whether there should be some kind of intermediate. From reading the USA thing, it sounded like they are being cautious because it might be hard about pushing forward. They're going to accept some slowness.
Who's they, Clem?
Pardon me?
Who is they when you say they are being cautious?
Well, I got the impression from reading this spec that there was some concern it might be hard to do this all at once.
So Carmen kindly has joined us today. I don't know, Carmen, if you're on audio or not. But she pointed out in the chat that the Project USA tech specification and companion guide does not dictate how data holders, including providers or developers, should handle historical data. So it the spec as it exists provides structure for new data being collected and then shared. So it sounds pretty inclusive. Not exclusive at this point. Carmen, if you have audio, feel free to jump in.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, there you are.
Okay, great. Hi, Carmen Smiley from ONC. I just want to point out that, yes, just as I stated in the chat, the technical specification companion guide does not dictate how providers will handle historical data. And that was out of caution because we received feedback from a number of developers that were taking part in the technical work group or participating in the technical work group that could actually create some issues. But Dr. McDonald also had a really good question if there are other content models. And one of the reasons why we forged ahead with Project USA is because there are no other sort of content models that were known. I suppose somebody could enter Publication 28 as a different content model, but it's still difficult to interpret how it was applied.
Yeah, well, I got to say, I like the model. I just don't know how heavy the lift is.
Yeah, and Clem, that's why this recommendation is structured this way. So to basically allow for people who have pre-collected address information pre the USA guide to, you know, not have to retroactively go back and renormalize it, but at least have some hints or a metadata flag to receivers to let people know whether the address information had been normalized or had not yet been normalized. Which could then allow the receivers of data or actors who are processing the data to make a decision about whether to call the API or otherwise treat the data differently, whether it's been normalized or non-normalized.
That's a good idea.
Well, this is Steve Eitner. I think that by exchanging the normalized data, you're still forcing the hand to modify or at least use an API to update it at least for patient matching purposes, because otherwise you're not going to get a match.
Well, matching isn't all or none. I mean, people are doing matching now.
Yeah, that's right. People are doing matching against the existing unnormalized content model. One might imagine that you would do better by pre-normalizing address information. I could imagine, for example, in some of the work that I've done in the past, that it might be useful to be able to get data and make a decision about whether it's been normalized or not. And if it's not been normalized, normalize it prior to engaging in matching behavior, it would be really useful to know which of those two it was so that I could make differential decisions.
Right, exactly. Wholeheartedly agree that part of the process, that's kind of where I was going, is that as soon as you get over that cliff, you're basically encouraging the normalization. Not that that's a bad thing, it just creates a heavy lift.
Al, can you scroll a little to the right or perhaps shrink your view a little so we can see the discussion text that I'm trying to
By the way, Abby asked a question about where we are relative to the recommendation she had about the unhoused. And
we should go there next.
Yeah, so the thought process that I was proposing is we first deal with the high-level USA recommendations and then dive into recommendations relating to the unhoused.
Well, I just want to respect the fact that Abby suggested that she wanted to be sure that those were included together, that we not approve the one without addressing the other. So I think before we go towards making a final decision on this or a today decision, I'd like to go ahead and invite Abby and Mark to discuss their thoughts in the row above.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
And this is Steve Leitner again. If we're going down this path, it probably ties to a recommendation for public health for investment in infrastructure in that same space and looking at adopting USA and investing in the technology to upgrade.
Yeah, I don't know how to handle that one. I think we either handle it as part of the V3 recommendations to contemplate a recommendation to ONC to sponsor HHS or US Post Office to stand up a Project USA service for the nation, or we could sort of take it with our next remit relative to the ISA portion of our work. I didn't quite know how to handle that one. My sense is that it would be really useful for the nation to have an address validator that was conformant to the USA specification. It feels like it's two halves of a sandwich, maybe the bread and the top bread and the bottom bread. I'm not quite sure where we want to insert those recommendations. Stephen, just also cautious that USCDI is a content model specification, not an interoperability or services model specification. So I'll sort of defer to you about where you want to, whether you want to wade into those waters here or just stick where we are and then later on wade into those waters.
I like where we are so far, but again, I'd like to invite Abby and Mark to reflect what they've included here. Does one of you want to take the mic?
Yeah, I at a high level, and then I'll have Mark do more detailed. At a high level, I think what we tried to propose was some additional language that would help alleviate some of the impact of making this change. Overall, the change is a good change. And I think having a standard and a normalized way to do this across the country will reflect on it being easier to use for many purposes. What matters to me is that at the same time, we're adding in a pathway to reduce the impact of the equity divide that will be created by doing this for some populations. So that was really the intent of what Mark and I kind of batted around over the weekend. Mark, do you want to add more detail?
Sure. I think Abby and I tried to work out something that was smallest lift possible to try to create a placeholder for this issue. And so adding a value for homeless or lack of stable address, not being prescriptive about what the proper name for that is, but just so those are just conceptual terms in our
write-up seemed to make at least an important minimal contribution. It does not add a whole range of things that could be there, such as the Accountable Health Communities list of different reasons for not having a specific address, which might actually help with matching. We just a basic placeholder for lack of a stable address, and with the thought that that both helps with matching. In fact, you've got something rather than nothing when you're doing the matching. It precludes inaccurate matching when you have the same person with multiple addresses because they're moving from shelter to shelter, et cetera, et cetera. And it tries to avoid, as the beginning of the justification says, tries to avoid embedding some structural issues. I think the overall thought is the best approach to patient matching is actually some efficient combination of characteristics, not just address. But Abby and I thought that was maybe a little too much for today's conversation. Is that a good summary? Well,
could I clarify, Mark? Are you just saying we should have an attribute saying something that implies they don't have a stable address? Is that all you're asking?
That's what we've got for now. I'm not saying that that's ideal, but well, it seems I guess that would not be a heavy lift.
Yeah.
Mark, would that distinguish between housing instability and an address with a really short effective period or a past effective period?
That is a distinction that the health related social needs screening tool takes into consideration, but we didn't know how much appetite there was for adding detail here.
From the chat, it sounds like they already have it.
I'm sorry, this is Carmen Smiley. There already is a metadata element that indicates if a patient is known to be homeless.
And that's in the comment, that's in the address field.
It is in the specification under the metadata schema towards the end. It is an optional field at this time because not all systems will be collecting this information, or sometimes it is unknown. But if systems decide to apply this, they have the option to do so.
So Carmen, that wouldn't be represented as something in the address field. It would be something separate from the address field, like an address being none or address being homeless or something like that.
Yes,
it would be a separate thing. It would be a blank address with some indicator that they're homeless.
Precisely. And hopefully there's some provenance data as to, you know, the date in which that was collected or by whom.
That sounds like we're done then.
Maybe we can ask Abby and Mark to review the content model and verify that it meets the concerns that I think they very appropriately raise.
Thanks. And Carmen, if there's a link that you could drop into the chat or to send by email, that would save me a little time. I'd so appreciate it. Thank you.
Of course. Yeah, I'll do that now.
And would this be based on that conversation? So if it's not part of the address itself, which is a discrete data element, it sounds like what we would need or what we might be proposing is either a reworking of a current data element that's already been submitted of a homelessness flag, yeah, or a homelessness indicator. And
I have a basic question here, which is, does USCDI list discrete fields? Or does it refer to a content model? Because I was being, I think, deliberate when I talked about the notion of a content model for address. And what I mean by a content model is a little more structure than, you know, a bag of fields. But includes, so part of the complexity of healthcare data, and I was really sensitized to this when Stephen pointed me at the naming specification for how to handle unknown names or new baby names. Part of the issue that we have is that we're trying to force fit a content model into a fixed set of, you know, bag of fields that exist in databases. But, you know, when we think about a content model, we're thinking about something a little more sophisticated than a bag of fields and you know, text in a bag of fields. We're thinking about metadata that can be used to tag and accompany fields that help interpret what those fields mean, or may in some cases tell us that certain fields are or aren't applicable. And so when I'm thinking about adopting the content model for address, I'm actually thinking that for USCDI, we think about address not as a bag of fields, but we think about we think about address as something that has some structure and semantics to it. There clearly are going to be some changes that are required to registration systems and EHRs to better adopt the content model. And the USA specification lists some ways that you can adopt the content model specification when you have a bag of fields implementation.
So let me answer one question. I know that I can answer the way that it is right now on USCDI. We have a loose structural requirement for the data element of address. And our goal with, you know, considering USA is to have a more structured, I guess bag of fields is a way to put it, but it has to be, you know, it's more of a, it just put more structure, like it must, there's, Carmen can for sure, speak more intelligently on exactly what an address structure would look like under USA. But the structure right now that we have for it is, you know, these things that are on screen right now with, all the things that most people think about when they think of what's in an address. And so it would be in sort of imposing a new structure on it to say it has to be in this way, maybe in this order using certain conventions. And so that's how we currently represent address, and that's how we would do it if we were to adopt USA as the standard for current and previous address capture.
Yep.
And exchange.
David has a question or a comment.
There's always a question of the encoding of all this data, and some things have fairly complicated encodings like lab results. So I've never been quite clear how far USCDI goes towards specifying the encoding. I was assuming that'd be left to particular implementation choices, whether you're using FHIR or CCDA or whatever. But at the CDA, at the USCDI level, I would assume we would want to list those metadata fields that we now think are relevant to passing this address information, regardless of the encoding model that it eventually gets applied. And this current list does not include the metadata, which I think would be an issue if we're going to use the metadata as a solution to Abby and Abby's suggestion.
Yeah, I think we would memorialize my recommendation as saying that draft USCDI v3 would either adopt the content model that's implied by the thing that was previously on the page, or would adopt the USA content model with an accompanying metadata field.
So the USA has very, very specific lists of what the screen should be for various purposes. So I would say that suggests to me it's defined the encoding.
That's right. It's defining the content model. Then that content model wants to get poured into a V3 container or a FHIR container or a V2 container.
Right. But it seems clear that our recommendation is going to broaden what the current data element list there is of current address, street name, number, city, town, state, zip code. It's more than that, right? it's not just those things encoded per USAA style, it's actually some additional metadata that's important.
Well, certainly Arian's thing is an additional metadata.
Well, and so is Abby's and Mark's.
Right. And so I'm in good computer science fashion, I'm proposing to handle this through one layer of indirection. That we have, you know, we have a high level kind of encoding or content standard applied. The content standard that's applied currently is the US, effectively the US CDI V1, V2 content model, which with no disrespect intended, is much more of a bag of fields content model. And then if you set the USA flag, metadata flag, then you are also adopting the USA content model that's defined through the USA specification and the AHIMA implementation guide.
So I want to go back to a question that Mark put in the chat. Would the Project USA metadata approach help with patient matching if it's not part of the address field? I think that's a question to Carmen.
Yes, and I think that's a really, really good point. And I added just a little follow-up in the chat. And it's what we have heard, and in my experience, anytime health systems will add words like homeless or unknown within an address field, it creates a challenge whenever you're trying to match, also because of the great variation in descriptive text that's added, that it has nothing to do with an actual address. And so in order to overcome this, or to help overcome this, that's why we built out the metadata schema to provide additional information or data about the data for any time something is unknown or perhaps may need a human adjudication or other decision-making.
Yeah, and again, this is this key point that I've been trying to make very poorly, because we're now speaking at computer scientists talking to social scientists and biological scientists, but you know, if I think people are implicitly assuming that address is a bag of fields, that is, address is a set of text fields that are labeled in a certain way, and you pour text into them, and that's just because we've designed our systems in that way. As we adopt the USA spec, we're adopting a content model that's got some structure to it. That structure includes metadata. The metadata changes the interpretation of what's in those fields. And then you've got an impedance mismatch problem when you're trying to pour something with a structured content model into something that's got a bag of fields. And that's where you get into these strange and inefficient workarounds, like saying unhoused or homeless in an address field.
So it's
in my opinion, is that this will help patient matching, not hinder it. I don't know, see how it could hinder it.
Completely agree.
Okay, so it sounds like our final recommendation, it'd be good to move on from this discussion soon, is really what Arian originally put down. And if you scroll down a row and over a column, I'm trying to capture that just so we can maybe put this to rest. Recommend adoption of Project USA address content standards and the associated AHIMA implementation guide as the content model for address, with an additional metadata element indicating the content model used, whether it is the address conforms to USA specs or not. And we believe, and I think Abby has confirmed in the chat, that will, you know, with the now greater awareness of this additional optional field to specify homelessness, that will cover the need. Are we comfortable with that?
Stephen, it sounds very comfortable with that, with maybe just one wordsmith, that after the word content model, it says slash standard, because we effectively are pointing to a implementation guide, a standard of sorts, might help resonate with some people more.
No objection.
Done. All right. Let's let that percolate here as we move on to the next area of inquiry.
Well, Stephen.
Yes.
It's David. there was multiple parts to Abby and Abby's recommendation, and Mark, I guess. Are we deferring discussion on that, or just?
Well, I think that what we found was that the metadata element that is already included in the USA technical spec. Yep.
No, I got that part. I got that part.
This, right?
Yeah, I got that part, and I'm comfortable with that. But I'm wondering about the, you know, further recommend ONC advance a second process with the timeline and deliverables, et cetera. That additional part of their recommendation, is that just so far outside our remit that we don't discuss it, or?
Well, it is outside our remit, I guess. Abby, do you feel that there is a persistent additional request there or recommendation?
I mean, the truth is the answer is yes, but I also understand it's out of our remit. So I don't know when the task of the task force is to really work on data elements, what to do in that situation. And if we separate out that recommendation, it can be easily sidelined. And I think the truth is we don't really know how what we're saying here is going to impact how it's going to impact equity and or patient matching. And it'd be really nice to actually be able to do something and test it to be able to validate our assumptions.
Now, Carmen, you spoke to us last time about your plans for the next phases of Project USA and additional testing, as well as additional focus on that. Can you say how that would address what Abby is looking for here?
Yes, so sure. I just want to point out that the pilot that we're working on this year will measure the effect of the specification and the API on improved patient matching. So this is these are algorithmic tests that we're doing, sort of based on unstandardized versus standardized data. I unfortunately do not have, current resources to invest in its effect on equity, and I'm not sure how that could be measured, but it doesn't exclude it. I think it's an excellent suggestion and definitely agree with it, how that would be incredibly meaningful. It's simply not on the to-do list in the immediate sense.
Can I just say, Stephen, that that's what I remembered from the conversation? And that's why I was asking for what I was asking for. And Mark put in the chat that what he recalls is that's within the organization, not amongst organizations. How we test that is the error rate. If the error rate is higher with racial and equity descriptors and demographics attached to it, then we have actually a biased algorithm. And that's how we're testing it. If our matching rate is higher for Caucasian and white populations, then, and that's actually what we are actually seeing that.
And, you know, you gotta be aware that in a lot of hospitals, the recording of race, especially non-white and Asian, is very low. The hospital I worked in 15 years ago, it was like 20%, 30%, and it has a lot of complicated causes. The clerks don't want to say that, you know, don't want to ask. They figure it's being racist. So it's very complicated. Yeah. They're mostly empty a lot of times.
Clem, I hear you. We have the same issues in our health centers. They don't want to ask. I mean, we just did a survey to our staff, and I'm not sure our staff want to be labeled. So I get the question around what's the best way to ask that question and what is the accuracy of that data, but we have to do something. And we cannot perpetuate, in my opinion, we cannot continue to perpetuate standards and or policies that don't think about this.
Hey, Jim Georges, can I make a quick comment about that? Though I think you're right, Clem, in the past, before 21st Century Cures fire APIs that make USCDI relevant, we were stuck with a clerk at the front asking and all the human stuff that goes along with that. But it's important to do this work now because all the patient-facing apps that develop may create much more acceptable ways to bring that up from 30% to, you know, much higher, and our being ready with the USCDI recommendations here. Hopefully there'll be patient-facing apps that overcome some of that front desk clerk hesitancy.
Well,
Sorry, I think David has a comment, and then I'll put my hand up as well.
Yeah, I was maybe for Carmen. Do I recall that there is a future phase of the work that would address person identification as opposed to just the address of the person? And if so, would not that be a place where you could address some of Abby's concerns? Because if you don't have an address or you don't have a stable address, then the identification matching is going to come down to something about the person.
I completely agree for the need to further specify other demographic elements, but the scope for Project USA is only patient address.
Okay.
Right. She was really clear about that last week, and that's my hesitation.
Well, I would then try to broaden Abby's suggestion to say that there should be a future ONC effort to address identification of persons that would include people who don't have a stable address or who have a tribal address or who have something that just doesn't fit to the USA metadata. Because if this is about person matching, that's the problem we should be trying to solve.
Could we get either you or Abby or Mark to put that recommendation in the spreadsheet so we can sort of consider it more formally?
Ideally in row two, cell column G, maybe in red text, Abby, so we can come back and revisit that next time.
So if I could just make a comment, we did a lot of patient matching, and that's why we realized the problems with missing racial data. But you can go a long way without the racial data. You got the name, you got a telephone number, you got multiple addresses sometimes are useful, so that we shouldn't be limiting it to one. And certain names are easy to match, certain ones are hard. Some of the Hispanic names and Asian names are hard.
And Clem, if you look at the recommendation that Mark and I put into the spreadsheet, we actually touch on that. That we agree with you completely. That is a more complicated. There is a way to improve the matching algorithm and not reduce the disparities and improve the equity issues. But I'm not sure how to handle our recommendation in the confines of the request that this task force is being asked to resolve.
Hey, so I'd like us to use the hand raising feature just to streamline conversation. And then just as a point of order, I've got my hand up. So I dropped this in the comment, but I think it's important to memorialize in the discussion itself. My view, and definitely interested in Abby and Mark's view on this, is by adopting a more principled content model, that the bag of fields model has implicit bias, because it assumes that there is one and only one address. It assumes that, you know, an address is something that's a fixed abode. It assumes that that we don't have co-housing, co-living, or other kinds of situations. And by being much more explicit in the metadata about how to handle those situations, moving to the USA specification reduces implicit bias. I think that's a statement that makes plausible sort of a priori sense. It probably needs to be tested in the real world. And that sounds like something that if Ochin could take on would actually serve the world. That is, by adopting the USA spec, do we better handle equity? But it feels to me more plausible that adopting the USA spec has the intent or has the implication of reducing bias by forcing us to be far more explicit about things that are explicit, that are rendered inappropriately implicitly in many contexts. So thank you. Steve is next in our hand raising.
Ike.
Thank you so much. I do think that we need to consider, and it's not necessarily part of the standard itself, but it's looking at spending or utilizing the standard, is support for real world testing. And to Abby's point, looking at future work, I think looking at intra-organization success is one thing. Looking at inter-organization success in exchange and matching is a whole different piece. So what does that roadmap look like
for utility and really what are our expectations in utilization. Not to say that we shouldn't move forward and normalization is a good thing, I think it is, but we need to set reasonable goals for the available resources. That's it.
All right. So we are looking forward to Abby, Mark, David, perhaps others collaborating on a specific recommendation that we could include as a complement to our recommendation to adopt the Project USA standard that would help to address some of these core issues. And with that, I would like to move us beyond the address see that I think we have Michelle. Oh, that was the level one. We're not going to talk about level one issues right now. So the next, I'm just going down the list. In row five, we've got Clem, who submitted a comment about assessment and plan of treatment. Regarding an item in draft US CDI V3, which makes it our task 1A, that LOINC should be an applicable standard and or provide a sample list. So Clem, do you want to comment on this?
Well, sometimes the goal is to get your glucose greater down below 50, or I mean that, below 100. And so you need, you're describing a complicated thing. It's not just that they want, you know, not a single statement. And for that, you need LOINC. So they want to get the hemoglobin up. They want to get the glucose down. They want to get whatever it is they want to set. The goals are sometimes stated that way. Now, this is a little...
Hold on, Clem. David has his hand up.
Okay. Yeah, thanks. I mean, my general concern with some of these broad categories like assessment and plan of treatment is that we do a disservice if we try to force too much structure onto something that is fairly complex and fluid, as Clem points out. And I would rather see us handle a textual statement from the provider as to what the assessment and plan of treatment is, rather than force them into overly complex structures that they don't bother to actually be careful about because it's too much work. So this is a generic comment about a number of these more complex fields. We should at least allow for passing textual information that summarizes the sense of the plan, even if in fact it's not fully encoded.
Well, David, I agree with 100%, but assessments per se are often structured. So, they're basically, and Medicare has a bunch of them. There's post-acute care, and they're formally structured. They happen to also have LOINC codes. So you're right, maybe we should split this up a bit.
Or allow for the non-structured assessments when that's all you've got. I mean, I agree. Some of them are highly structured because they're very specific to use case, but a discharge from an outpatient clinic, you know, there's going to be an assessment and plan part of the note that won't be structured, and we should be able to pass that information. Maybe that gets passed under notes.
No, you're absolutely right. I think you're absolutely right.
Al has his hand up.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to David's comment. I appreciate you saying that the way that you said it, because it was really intentional. As most people know, assessment and plan of treatment is quite the legacy data element. It goes back to the Common Clinical data set. But because it is such a broad topic, especially, you know, even the fact that it's really two parts and not just a single part that's unstructured. Two parts is unstructured, and we want to be able to capture quite a few different kinds of things in assessment and plan of treatment. And where it's more specific, like SDOH assessment, then we are more specific about what what sort of standards ought to be used for something in a narrower use case.
So the intent then here is for this to be open-ended. Is that what you're saying, Al? I appreciate your weighing in on that.
Yeah, that's what we've gotten comments in the past about making assessment and plan of treatment more structured. And we have not done that because it has really almost always been a place where a lot of different things could go into that category. So yeah, it is why we did intentionally leave it more open and less structured.
I like that. And I mean, you know, if you have structure and you wrap it and encode it properly, it should be recognizable as structure, and a system that can handle the structure should deal with it. But you wouldn't want to exclude the more open-ended content that isn't structured, because there's a lot of clinical value in that. And you'd hate to leave it on the floor.
Right. And even if it's not machine readable, it's at least, you know, it's at least it's there. Like it's similar to, you know, the way clinical notes is structured, at least in USCDI.
So is there a recommendation here? Is there an opportunity? I know last year we spent a lot of work, and Clem in particular spent a lot of work identifying specific items from LOINC that we felt should be listed. And Al's going to come back and tell us at some point what happened with all those recommendations. But is the work group interested in being more specific around this data element of assessment and plan of treatment, and specifying, you know, some or all LOINC assessment tools as related?
Oh, excuse me, I can't make my hand raise. on the computer. But I think the problem is when you say assessment and plan of treatment, that is typically part of a physician's discharge note. But if you separate out assessments, those are often quite structured. You know, Glasgow Coma score, you can go down a whole list. APGAR score, and then there's all the ones with Medicare and a lot of nursing assessments structures.
So it's a good question. So under the assessment and plan of treatment data class, is there perhaps a need for a more specific assessments data element that would then point to some or all of these structured assessments that have already been standardized?
You know, it's David, I'm speaking out of turn, but some of those things like, you know, an APGAR score is an observation, really. It's a structured observation because there'll be multiple ones of them. And it's really more like a lab result. So the generic solution is to be able to pass these structured assessments in whatever appropriate place they belong, including here, if it's warranted. If there's an assessment that is at the scope of a discharge assessment and plan, it could be passed here. And the incumbent then on the system to recognize, is this a structured assessment or is this textual? I assume, Hans, that, you know, in FHIR, that's easily encodable in a way that distinction is machine readable.
That's correct. You can code, you can be structured, and you should know what that is if you did it, fill it out right.
And it might make sense for ONC to list the appropriate, known, and established structured assessments that could go in this field that should be expected by a system. It's a long list, like Clem points out, which we could provide.
Yeah, that. David, it's a thousands long list, and we made an attempt to identify at least a sample set of structured assessments in the new data class clinical tests, along with different, so like SDOH assessments is a more discrete list, and there are value sets that have now been published to identify, we call it a starter set or a sample set, or at least just an example set of these coded structured assessments for SGOH and then the coded structured clinical tests, which could conceivably quite easily be, could include things like Glasgow Coma Scale and Apgar scores. That's still within the nature of a clinical test as a structured thing that's done clinically. And those are both in that category.
So are you saying, Al, that based on the current USCDI conception, that we've put these structured assessments in clinical tests as opposed to in assessment and plan of treatment, and that's where they, you know, could stay for now?
I would say that's a reasonable approach. Like, of course, it's reasonable because we did it. That's what I'm suggesting. Is I'm suggesting that that's an appropriate container. The clinical test is an appropriate container, or where needed, more structured assessments like SDOH assessment is at least, if not as structured, at least coded. Can be within it. There's room for more well-defined specific assessments. Currently, there's only the SDOH assessment that's part of that assessment.
Again, my hand can't go up. Aaron, your hand's up, right?
Yeah. So I'm just wondering whether this is such an unprincipled field, particularly combining assessments and plan of treatment or plan of care. I wonder whether the way to handle this particular area is to deprecate this piece of USCDI structure in favor of the clinical test, make sure that SDOH assessments have a natural home there. And then, you know, there's a broader conversation around plan of care. It is a little funny to have assessment and plan of care be lumped into the same underlying thing. I don't know how clinicians think about it, but, you know, sort of in my computer science informatics hat on, it feels very unprincipled and funny. Clem.
Well, I disagree. I mean, I think that's not the, I think we should keep assessment as a structured thing, as optionally structured, because it's not just clinical people. The nursing homes do it, and those are nurse aides or something. There's all kinds of assessments that are done. And in the nursing field especially, they characterize them very clearly. They think of assessments as part of their job.
Yep.
So I don't think I'd throw them into the clinical tests.
Yeah. Clem, I agree. I think that's right. But I think the gist of Al's recommendation is to consider assessments as something that has some structure associated with them, and that pairing of LOINC code and the textual or structured output of the LOINC code is something that's already handled by that field.
And also specifically talking about the sort of the post-acute care settings, the many post-acute care settings. This was one of the reasons. This is actually that particular setting is what led to the current structure of the health status data field, data class, and things like functional status, mental function, those sorts of things, disability status. Those are really designed, several of those data elements are really designed to address the structured data requirements of, amongst other things, the post-acute care settings.
So we'll be getting back to that next week. A couple of hands are up. David, I think you were up first.
Just would point out that, you know, the most specific part of the plan of treatment is often the medication list, which we capture elsewhere. So the notion that it all has to be in this field would contradict lots of things. So I would just make sure that we allow for a free-flowing textual assessment and plan for those things that aren't well captured in other fields, like medications, discharge medications, for example.
Kelly?
can't hear you.
You're muted still, Kelly.
Yeah, as the nurse on the panel, I have to say, I agree with some of these comments that are being made about assessment. And so is there something, are we discussing actually separating them out? I'm hearing a lot of mixture here that we're trying to quantify what goes under assessment, because nursing assessments are more than like APGAR scores, right? We need to be able to use our defined interventions in assessments that go beyond LOINC. And so I'm not sure if someone's advocating to separate these out, but I certainly would. You know, nutritionists would argue that they have evaluation interventions that should be discreetly coded. Respiratory therapists, but as nurses, we too have different assessment codes. And just, I throw that out there, as I've sat on a number of the ONC task force, and we seem to favor the physician documentation aspects, which are fine, but in adding to the care coordination and the overall health goes beyond social determinants of health.
So I think the question is there a need that's within our remit this year at this time? We have been asked to comment on items included in USCDI draft V3, which certainly includes assessment and plan. It's still there. It's been there for years. Whether those need to be clarified, specified, you know, removed potentially. So I think this is about further clarification of the assessment and plan of treatment data element within the data class of the same name. What we've heard is SDOH assessments have gotten special treatment. We've heard that specific LOINC coded assessments have been called out under clinical tests. Al's mentioned that patient status, as we're going to discuss next week, is a place where some of these assessments go. So the question I think that people are asking is, within assessment and plan of treatment itself, which is currently fairly unstructured, is there a need to go deeper in specifying, you know, whether it's, you know, assessments by any member of the care team, physicians, nurses, nutritionists, et cetera. Or should this one just kind of be left as it is? And should we be focusing on adding more specificity within clinical tests or somewhere else? I mean, I think if there's another tranche of specific assessments that we might want to add to clinical tests in addition to the ones that were added last year, that would be fine. We can certainly recommend that. And my guess is that, you know, if we did that thoughtfully, that HITECH would approve that, you know, and whether those were, you know, assessments done by any specific member of the care team, I think would be immaterial.
Yeah, can I propose, I wonder whether somebody can volunteer to put together a more structured recommendation along those lines. It feels like the sense of this discussion is to deprecate this data class, to include an assessments data class that's sort of parallel to clinical tests, and that assessments could serve as a class that holds a bunch of stuff that wants to happen. But it feels like this is an area where we need a little more of a concrete recommendation to react to. I'm happy to go do the work of putting together a straw case recommendation, but you know, other folks may be closer to it or better situated to be able to put a more structured recommendation in place.
This is Kelly, and I'd be happy to join you on that journey. It seems as though if we're trying to achieve what we're ultimately trying to get out of a garbage in, garbage out, we're actually trying to help formulate, to help support some of the advanced analytics that could help with structured data analysis. And where you find many clinicians' complaints and concerns is that they're really just, they're really not providing what they need to within the EMRs. And so often these free text notes really manage what they're trying to say. And so if we were actually able to capture them in those structured data elements, we may scale and find many benefits.
This is Steve. I'm happy to contribute as well. One of my current scratch the heads in that space is looking at administering assessment. I've completed my share of assessments as part of clinical trials where the form may have been handed to me by a clinician, but I sat in a corner and filled it out. So I'm not quite sure if that counts as a clinician administered assessment or not. Not trying to resolve that here and now, but just pointing out that is one element where things could get a little confusing or conflagrated, depending on how you want to define terms.
Okay. So, Al, if you could zoom out just a bit. There we go. Thank you. All right. So I've tried to capture our discussion here. It sounds like there may be a subgroup that's going to think about perhaps a more specific recommendation.
Yes, Steve, I did find my hand.
There you go. It's a good looking hand, Clem.
I think so. So did David. But I think a small thing is that clinical tests are things you send to someone else does. Assessments are done usually by whoever the person is who's doing the assessment, nurse or whomever. That's all.
Good point. You know, we might want to pull some of that work that was done in clinical tests last year over and reset it, you know, into a new assessments data element. Sorry.
I leave clinical tests alone. Sorry.
Well, no, but we did put some of this into clinical tests. I think we were using that as a bit of a catch-all last year. And I think what you're saying is, you know, some things should be called clinical tests and some things should be called assessments. And since we have different classes, you know, with those different names, and, you know, again, one of the things that we do with each version of USCDI is we rearrange things to make them more logical. So that's something that could be considered really that isn't part of our current remit. Good to remember that. That would be a different kind of a recommendation focused ahead on V4.
David has a patient hand.
Yes, David. Thanks.
Thanks. It's a really zoomed out question that I realized I didn't fully grasp what how USCDI thinks about sort of when and for what purpose information is encoded in USCDI. In other words, some of these things are things you might expect on discharge and transfer to a new facility. Other things are things you might expect, you know, happening 3-4 times a day during an inpatient stay. When does USCDI take effect? What is it associated with in terms of a triggering event? Does it imply that everything that's done continually in the hospital should be done as USCDI encoded data, or is it only applied to data that passes interface boundaries to external systems? I'm not formulating my question very well.
I think the way I would conceptualize it, and Steven's the expert here, but the way I would conceptualize it is that it's the content model. It's the underlying content model to which interoperability specifications are applied. And so in particular, we map the US Core Fire spec and consolidated CDA spec to USCDI. And there's an implication that EHRs have the ability to collect and manage information accordingly so that they can interoperate according to that specification. But we don't specify the content model or the representational model in the EHR.
Or other HIT, because I don't think we're talking about just
that's right. EHRs. Thank you. Yeah, that's right. That's right, Hans.
But any place where an API or system boundary is crossed, this would apply. So I guess what I'm getting at is something broad like assessment and plan of treatment could apply multiple times a day in a hospital setting if you were querying a fire interface. It's not a discharge only assessment and plan, like the historical use of the term.
Yeah, that's correct, David. So yeah, it's any API access or any access to one of the several CCDA document types. It would have to be able to query the data classes in USCDI.
Thank you.
Okay. I've continued to capture or attempt to capture our discussion, we've got some interesting ideas here. Clem, thank you for bringing this forward. I don't think we have any specific recommendations yet, even though it is within our remit to suggest added specificity to existing data classes and elements. So if somebody comes forward with a specific recommendation, I would put that into row 5, column G. If you do it in red text, we'll find it when we go back through this next time and come back to it. So we've got a few more minutes before public comment. And if we are just going down the list as we are, Clem, you had the next item as well, which had to do with care team members and the care team member identifier. Again, this is in draft V3. Your recommendation was that codes should be specified. And if you scroll down, Al, I think you'll find this on row 6. You mentioned there's no code that covers all possible members. Code should always include a code and code system. Think NPI and DEA would go a long way. Also note, almost anyone can request an NPI, but would require code when available, an approach we have taken in the past. So the kernel here, Clem, is... You're looking for more specificity for care team member identifier by specifying a code and the applicable code set. Is that correct?
Yes. I mean, in general, it's just going to be not very usable to know who's supposed to be there, what kind of a person is, et cetera. And the only bring up the NPI and is because anybody can apply for one. It's not perfect, but most people have them, and most caregivers have them, and even taxi drivers who deal with Medicare. And I'm just not sure about pediatrics because they may not have a Medicare connection. But we need something so you have a label and you can hang on to it.
Al, do you want to comment on where you've been with your thinking about care team member identifier?
We had first considered adding something specific like NPI or a DEA number, but because the potential use cases for care team member and care team member role are so much broader than simply, credentialed providers, which is generally the group that have NPI numbers or DEA numbers. We decided to just make it less constrained and say, like, as long as if there's an identifier in this particular case with a particular care team member in a particular role, then you may provide it, but the question that we basically answered the question, should all health IT be required to capture NPI? We decided with version 2, with USCDI version 2, that we would not require all health IT be required to capture NPI.
With a lot of other situations, we have codes for some, but not every single element that could be there. And we just say that if available, you should use it.
The point about the additional number of different identifiers, whether they're, was added in the chat about nursing, unique nursing identifier. There could be other There could be other identifiers, could be business identifiers if a care team member is some other sort of entity that there was. We recognize that NPI certainly is an appropriate care team member identifier for a certain group, but we elected not to specify that particular code because there are so many others.
So I guess the question, and then we'll get to the hands, I think, is is it something that the work group would like to do to specify at least the addition of a code set item within care team member identifier, so that if an identifier is included, it could be specified what type of an identifier it is. Is that something that you included already, Al, or would that be an add-on?
Well, we didn't. So we did not include that caveat. I guess maybe caveat might not be the right word, but if you provide a coded identifier, provide the code system as well. I think that's your question, right?
Yeah. So that would be an option,
right? We did not specify that, and I have to double check the certification companion guide or the USCDI reference document to say, I believe we did not specify that sort of stipulation.
Okay. Okay, let's go to the hands, Hans.
On the last comment from Al, is that in the CCDI fire, a lot of places where identifiers use the type is normally included. But the question that then raises here for USCDI, at what level of granularity are we going to define these attributes? We have stayed fairly coarse in many cases. When are we going to get more granular, and are we effectively then starting to create a much more detailed data model that is already done in some of the standards? So that's the balancing act. I can see if the question is that we want to at least be able to capture MPI and DA if available. Perhaps that's one thing, but to indicate there must be a type on an identifier, then I think we're starting to get more granular in the US CDI than we need to, in light of what's already being done in those standards.
So I think you're saying that maybe that the juice wouldn't be worth the squeeze by adding an additional code system data element.
I don't think so. The intent is that we indicate that there's a minimum set of codes that we're interested in that we should be able to capture if available. With that part, I could see the potential, but if it's only to indicate that for an identifier, you should maintain a code system and a code to understand what the identifier is, then I think we drifted over into the standard space.
David? Oh, Kelly, you snuck in front of David. I don't know how that happened.
I think my hand was raised. I might have
to
change the color of it. Yeah, no worries.
If it's matching the wall on your deck there. I'm sorry.
My scenic wall. Mm-hmm. No, I just want to emphasize, I agree what the gentleman just said, is if there is a standard, then we should incorporate that. It's really important with data modeling and demonstrating value outcomes associated with the care provider, potentially as a very strong analytic ability to see the impact of their performance in practice and interventions on that patient's care outcome. There are many people in healthcare trying to find these equations. And if we don't allow for that discrete data element through like a digital citizen capture, we're not going to be able to achieve improving our care outcomes. So thank you.
David?
Yeah, I think we have to be careful of perfect being enemy of good enough in this case. A nationally scoped global identifier for everybody that's involved in the patient's care would be wonderful, but the lift to get there would be intense. And I would suggest that this should be worded to say that a locally scoped identifier is fine. You want some repeatability within the context of the current care events. Is this the same person that treated the patient yesterday? But you don't necessarily need a global identifier to answer most questions. So locally scoped identifiers would be acceptable. Global would be fine if you've got a provider who has a global identifier. Sure, it's the easiest thing to use.
And I'm sure. Do we need to go to public comment?
I think we do. And look at that. We've drained the swamp of the hands. Okay, I've tried to capture the discussion for everybody on this one. Public comment.
All right. Thank you, Stephen and Arian. We're going to now open up the call for any public comments. If you are on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function, which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you happen to be on the phone only, press star 9 to raise your hand. And once called upon, press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. So let's pause here for a moment to see if we have any raised hands. I'm not seeing any raised hands, so I'll turn it back to our co-chairs. Thank you.
All right. I don't think either one of us had a chance at the beginning of the meeting to clarify how much we appreciate the input of the public and welcome that along the way if you can jump in for us. So we have just a few minutes left. I don't know how much further we can go. It looks like, Clem, you included a number of these recommendations about trying to get more specific, and we can go through those. I want to call out or thank Mark for providing extensive input regarding health status. I think we still we are going to be getting back to that next week, as we said. And then just looking down the list, we've got a number of things that Abby and Mark put in. So I think we're falling a little behind. I know I feel like I'm falling a little behind in terms of doing my homework, in terms of checking into all of this and making sure that we're reading things ahead of time. But let's try as best we can to come next week prepared to focus in on the health status data class. Clem, your hand's up.
Well, just regarding David's suggestion, I think allowing a sort of a universal identifier and a local one is fine, but there aren't local ones set up routinely. So I think that's going to be a heavy lift. But I still think that option is fine. It's just that I don't think it'll happen.
Well, Clem, my concern is you've got a family member involved with patient care in many settings and probably more in the future. Are you going to tell them to go get an NPI before they can?
No, I think we allow no numbers.
Put a phone number in as long as it's.
Oh, hey, that's a great idea. Or an email.
Yeah, email. I mean, anything that's okay, just locally okay, scoped and understandable by the people that
great,
need to know
that's it. That's a great idea. There's no lifting to get that done.
I will point out, I'm scrolling through the spreadsheet, and there's just a tremendous number of suggestions that have been made. I think a lot of them by Clem. We're going to need to figure out how to manage our time so that we get to the use our time as wisely as possible. So we as work group leads will endeavor to organize ourselves around this. Hans, I noticed that you put in an item that is on row 31, where you didn't specify anything in column F. If you can fill that in, that would be great. And I'll commit to you all to at least get through and read all this with Arian, and we'll try to develop a prioritized list of focus areas for the time ahead of us. Let's go to the next or last slide here. There we go. This is what we have in front of us. A number of meetings, remembering that next week we're going to focus on the patient status, and then we're going to work through all of this as we go. Hans, do you want to provide a brief update on where you're at with the second spreadsheet and the mapping to CCDA and FHIR? Is that pretty well done?
The FHIR done is one column is done. The CCDA column is about halfway done. So I should have that in the next 1 or 2 days.
You're amazing. Thank you so much. And thank you to anybody who's offered to chip in and help Hans with that. All right. Well, we are at time, over time. Thank you, everyone, for your time and attention today. Always greatly appreciated. See you next month.
Thank you, Steve.